I went through the S training years ago, and they had this wonderful thing. They wouldn't let you take notes, so I'm like sitting there memorizing this because I thought it was so brilliant. They call it the anatomy of an upset, and they said there are three elements to an upset. And I found this to be almost universally true since then. This was in the 70s, so it's many years ago. One is thwarted intentions. People get upset because they wanted something to happen. They intended something to happen, and they got blocked somehow by that. They wanted to become a therapist, or they wanted to get this certain job, or they wanted to get, this person to love them, and that person didn't. And so thwarted intentions. You had an intention, and it just didn't work out. So the second one is unfulfilled expectation, which is somewhat similar. You expected yourself, the world, or other people to be different from the way they are. And then the third one is undelivered communications. There's something you haven't said out loud to yourself, maybe, but usually to us, somebody else. There's just some undelivered communication. I thought, that's brilliant. If people are angry or upset or hostile because of one of those three things, let's investigate in one of those three areas and see what we can do about that.
How do we help clients feel their anger without being taken over by it? One of the trickiest parts of anger is its volatility. You see, by the time the stimulus is identified, the angry response has often risen up and already taken control. But as Dr. Ron Siegel says, this kind of reaction can undermine anger's real benefits.
I mean, all of us get angry or hostile from time to time, but there are folks who make it or for whom it's a general style in the world. And these folks, of course, are quite challenging to work with clinically, in part because most of us who are psychotherapists or other kind of healthcare professionals, we kind of like people to like us. We think of ourselves as being good and nice and the like, and it's difficult for us when we encounter people who don't see us that way. And people who are generally angry can get angry at us as well. So what makes some people more generally angry? Well, anger is usually a response to either hurt or fear. And this could be that the person has been exposed to an unusual number of hurts, or simply they feel that they've been exposed to an unusual number of hurts. And for it to flip from simply feeling hurt or frightened to feeling angry, almost always people need to have a narrative about injustice. This shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't happen to me. I don't deserve this. And I need to protest, attack, in some other way, set the record straight, set the situation straight. Now, interestingly, people who act angrily a lot are not so good at feeling anger. When anger arises in us, if we immediately discharge it and immediately start yelling or criticizing or even, just writing nasty letters, we don't actually get to feel the texture of the anger. We don't get to actually sit with it because it just discharges into behavior. To actually feel anger and be and know anger, one has to be able to feel it and not immediately discharge it. It's not that we might not eventually say something, but it's quite different to sit with the anger than it is to express it. So one of the things that I think about very early on whenever somebody who's temperamentally angry comes into treatment is how might this person be having difficulty actually feeling anger, even though they're quite good at expressing it. Now, some people, of course, act angrily because of modeling. They simply grew up with a lot of aggression, and that's their mode of being in the world. We're all, apples don't fall far from the trees, and we all tend to behave with the models that we learn. Sometimes it's because people have been injured in a really traumatic way, and they're terrified of the images, the thoughts, the memories, the emotions connected with the trauma. So anything that comes up to it, the anger comes up really, really loud and clear as a kind of shield, a way to not feel those other emotions. And then, of course, people who are angry a lot tend to project a fair amount. They tend to see when problems arise, they don't tend to see it as something I'm doing. They tend to see it as something that the other person's doing. So they tend to externalize and they tend to project. And of course, that's no fun if you, as the therapist or other healthcare professional, are the one being projected upon, because basically it's the bad other that's being projected upon us, and we get treated as the bad other.
the first thing that I'm wanting to consider, of course, is what drives the anger. That when we look at human aggression in a general term, I think the literature of social psychology has been particularly instructive because it has been studying for decades this characteristic called human aggression. Under what conditions are people angry people? Under what conditions do people get hostile and even violent? And then if we start to translate some of that literature into clinical work, it has been an enormously valuable set of insights. And one of the most predominant models in the world of social psychology is known as the frustration-aggression hypothesis. And it just fits so cleanly for what happens in clinical work. The frustration that drives the anger. This person wants something. This person feels entitled to something. This person feels justified in expecting something that they don't get. Or something happens that they think is so unfair that they react to with anger. So I'm really interested in what kinds of underlying factors give rise to the pain. And sometimes it is unrealistic expectations. Sometimes it is physical pain. Sometimes it's emotional pain. And so very quickly, what I'm wanting to get at is taking the anger as the outgrowth of these underlying processes of, in some cases, I'll tell you the story a little bit of somebody dealing with sadness or grief that's underlying their rage at something that's unfair that's happened in life. Or very often it's just being angry because people aren't doing the things that you think they should do. You know, if you talk to the Gottmans, you know, arguably the world's premier marital researchers, and you ask them what single factor most determines marital satisfaction, they will unhesitatingly say how well your partner lives up to your expectations. And, of course, that begs the larger question of what happens when you have unrealistic expectations. When I'm talking about this in workshops, I'll show a cartoon where a pretty unhappy-looking woman is saying to her boyfriend, if you really loved me, you'd win the lottery. And she seems pretty clueless that her expectation's pretty unrealistic. So if we look at the structure of anger, the components, which is where I go with it, we look at the quality of the person's expectations, the quality of the person's frustration tolerance, the quality of the person's impulse control, and then the last part of it, the external attributional style. The fact that the person is willing to blame angrily the other person for not doing what they think that they should do. And so it becomes a pretty basic part of treatment then. How can I get at these underlying patterns and help this person explore what their expectations were, how they evaluated, which of course they hadn't, whether their expectations were even realistic or not. And it helps to get people to have a more realistic sense of how things work out there. There's a large element of reality testing that goes into it. Is this really what this person is capable of doing? Is this really what this organization can do? So if we look at it at a bigger level, we look at it at a smaller, more individual level, that quality of how people fan the flames of their own anger by not realizing this isn't what this person does, this isn't how this organization works, this isn't how this country works.
Why are some people really angry and hostile? One reason, just to take the surface part of this, drugs and alcohol, withdrawal symptoms make people very angry, lack of sleep, very angry. People who are under a lot of stress and there's nobody friendly around or they're not doing anything to manage that stress properly are going to be explosive. But then there's the person who tends to be the angry person, somebody who behaves in a way that is threatening. And by threatening, I mean small T threat, not big T threat, not like a gun or a knife, but baring the teeth or having a resting face that looks peeved or Any number of ways a person can sound with their voice or their finger pointing, or their words, using dangerous words and phrases. There are people who are angry because they've lived a life of unfairness, injustice, insensitivity in their families of origin. And they take that anger and they carry that forward in all of their relationships. Some people are angry because they come from angry families. And this is a way that they operate on an arousal level. They go right to anger. Some people are angry because they are so vulnerable to shame. They're vulnerable to that deeply parasympathetic state that nobody wants because it's close to annihilation. It's close to existential aloneness. And some people can't tolerate that feeling. And as soon as they feel any ounce of shame, they'll shoot right up into rage and attack. Because it's not going to be me that's going to feel small. It's going to be you. It's not going to be me that feels devalued. It's going to be you, right? So, again, a challenge for the therapist or in couple therapy for everybody in the room. There are other people who are angry because they're because they have some biological issue, which has to be ruled out. There are some people who have what Stephen Porges calls a poor parasympathetic or vagal break. That means that the vagal system is not engaged enough to mediate acceleration. And so I go from 0 to 100. And what's worse, I not only go to 0 to 100, but I have a hard time recovering. So if that is the case, you have to start looking at some biologic or neurobiologic issue, perhaps one that has to be medicated, or maybe there's something else going on, because that is not a matter so much of psychology as it is a problem with being able to limit and inhibit one's forward acceleration. That's a problem sometimes in the frontal areas with self-regulation. The frontal areas are involved in inhibition and limiting one's behavior, but also the back of the brain and that vagal system I was talking about. So you have to check out what is this before you determine what to do about it. In fact, in all matters of therapy, I think the biggest challenge to the therapist is not what you're going to do, but what are you looking at? What is this?
Hostility is sometimes an act of protection, right? I am trying to protect myself from these accumulated hurts and pains and injuries and wounds. And hostility emerges to say to the world, you will not do this to me anymore. And again, those can be real wrongs and hurts and pains, as well as perceived and projected wrongs and hurts and pains. But the basic building blocks of hostility are that accumulation of experiences and expectations that I'm going to be hurt. Something's going to attack me. Something's going to cause me pain, and I have to protect myself. And that the sense that there's not a recourse, there's not someone who is going to, or a system that is going to give me relief and compassion and understanding, right? Then there's blame that can emerge and externalization for the deserving, that others are now deserving of my hostility, of my anger. That they brought it on, that if they only had not done X, or they made me act this way, and all of those attributions begin to happen. But I think underneath it is a deep sense of being hurt. What is that phrase? Hurt people hurt other people, right? So, and I think that there's a lot of wisdom there. So I think when we're working or thinking about hostility, under that hostility, under that way of, because hostility, different from anger, hostility is a way of being in the world. It's an adaptation that this is how I'm going to relate to the world around me. And when a person has had enough accumulation of hurts and pains without empathy, without compassion, without recourse, without someone to intervene on their behalf, right, to protect them, then that way of being in the world can feel like this is all I have. Right? I don't have someone who is going to take care of me and protect me. This is what I got. And so this is how I'm going to enter the world. And so that it's functional, or it can that client can experience it as functional, and that it would be stupid not to, you know, be in the world in that way. That somehow being hostile is the smart thing to do, or being disparaging of others, blaming of others, externalizing of one's pain. Projecting that onto others can feel like this is how I need to be.
When partners are angry at each other, that can come about from a variety of so many things. I mean, one of them is often couples have a first disillusionment. They get together, they have that excitement, they fall madly in love, maybe they get married. And then, you know, pow, all of a sudden, they just hit that moment where you're not the person I thought you were. And they have a disillusionment. And when they have that disillusionment, they don't know how to resolve it. They don't have the emotional muscle or the skills to resolve it. And so over time, a lot gets built on that disillusionment. A lot of just repeated examples of the same thing, like where a person feels continually let down or continually not taken care of or not responded to by the other person, or they see the other person as selfish and narcissistic and self-centered and always into it for themselves. So that's one form of how I think anger develops in relationships. Another form, of course, is when the, for example, when somebody takes advantage of a relationship. And so examples of that are things like where a partner maybe gambles away the other person's money or does a really bad investment and they didn't tell the other person what they were doing. And so they have that sense of just being, you know, really badly betrayed and are pretty angry about that. Another one that's a big one in couples is what I call felony lies. And felony lies are when somebody, for example, is having an affair and the partner, the other partner picks up on it and thinks that that's true, that they really are having an affair, and they start asking questions. And the person having the affair says, "You must be crazy. You're making it up." And they continue to challenge the other person's sanity over time. And so the person gets angrier and angrier, but also feeling like crazy at the same time. So those are three ways that anger develops in relationships.